And so in the 350s and in the 340s, these continuous disputes, these petty squabbles as they are now really, will be overshadowed by the emergence of a new player on the political scene, namely Philip of Macedon. We'll continue our story of the political affairs of the Greeks and the radical shift that takes place mid-century as a result of the emergence of Philip in the final lecture of this class. I don't, however, want to finish by giving you the impression that the 4th century was a period simply of gloom and doom, or worse still, that it was a period of complete exhaustion. Politically, perhaps, but culturally, no. The polis is still a viable form, and it is still generating an active cultural life. So I want to turn for a moment then and talk about the cultural developments of the 4th century. The period that we've been talking about is clearly one of political turmoil. But turmoil can be exciting. It may be depressing from the point of view of politics, but it may actually stir the soul and stir the spirit. And that seems to be the case in some respects for the 4th century. For example, this is a period during which Greek philosophy reached new heights. If you ask normally who are the three great Athenian philosophers, the answer will be Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. Now, Socrates himself wrote nothing down, and we rely entirely on Plato to reconstruct the philosophy of Socrates. Both Plato and Aristotle are 4th century philosophers. Both of them produced volumes of philosophy covering topics as widely diverse as biology, political theory, ethics, and metaphysics. And it's often been said that Western philosophy takes its strength and direction from these two men. In fact, it was once remarked that all Western philosophy consists of footnotes to Plato. Who was Plato? Well, he was a student of Socrates, and it's sometimes difficult to distinguish between the philosophy of Socrates and the philosophy of Plato. It appears as if the direction that Plato was moving in his philosophy was a metaphysical direction, advocating a theory of forms. For him, this physical world in which we exist is only a pale reflection of a more perfect version of reality beyond this world. So that, for example, this lectern, these chairs, these lights, these are only specific versions. These are copies of forms, the ideal of which, the perfect lectern, the perfect chair, the perfect light, the quality, if you will, the essence of chair or lectern, exists in some more perfect world. And this whole line of philosophy would remain, people often remark that it has an Eastern style to it. It seems like Eastern metaphysics, but in fact it remains a strong part of the Western philosophical tradition, particularly as it's reinterpreted by the Neoplatonic philosophers of later antiquity, and it feeds directly then into Christian mysticism as well. So it's a strongly influential mode of thinking. Aristotle was a student of Plato, and in his philosophy we see Greek thinking moving off in a slightly different direction. He is really more empirical in his interests. That is to say, rather than seeing the objects of this world as an imperfect copy of a more perfect world, he tries to understand the essence of things by adding up all the examples of them. The example that's often given to distinguish these is that for Plato, all chairs are just inferior forms of the perfect chair, whereas for Aristotle, if you were to add up all the different types of chairs then and reduce them to their common denominator, then you would really understand what a chair is. I don't know why that example has taken hold in the way that it has, but it's what people often use. Aristotle and his students, it should be said, he had a great following, proceeded deductively, that is to say, by collecting masses of data which would then be assimilated so that good conclusions could be drawn from the largest amount of data available. And this same basic technique of assembling as much data as possible, finding what is generally true of as much of the data as possible so that one can hypothesize, this he does in a range of very different areas, but it's the same basic technique. Studies of weather, studies of plant life and biology, studies of the animal kingdom, and even political constitutions are treated the same way. So that, in fact, Aristotle and his students collected the constitutions of about 150 different Greek states. And the obvious intention here was to try to form a more perfect understanding of how political life works and how constitutions work by synthesizing the greatest number of examples possible. We're very fortunate that of all of these, the one that's come down to us is probably the one that was most detailed, the Constitution of Athens, written either by Aristotle or one of his students.